Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Good morning, David. How are you?
Good, my friend. How about yourself?
Good. How's the project coming?
Everything's going along lovely. Lovely, man, lovely, nice. Lovely. The pollen is, I mean, you can't see it yet, but evidently it's out there. I have never had such itchy eyes in my life.
Oh, really?
Usually it's from sawdust, but I don't know what's going on. But every day.
It got a little warmer, and then Barb said something last night. She goes, you know what's next, don't you? And I'm like, yeah, I know what's next.
Yeah, the green wave.
Yeah. Oh, well. It's all good.
Yeah.
Could be worse. We could be living, like, I don't know, in Siberia or something.
Right.
Probably no pollen up there.
I got a pressure washer. I'm good.
All right, then. We're good. Get a pressure washer.
And 90 PSI at the spigots.
Ooh, dog. All now, right.
You have to buy good hoses.
I guess.
You can't buy cheap hoses that have that kind of pressure.
I hate cheap hoses that kink up on you and spiral around. That's like a pet peeve of mine. Maybe we could do a little segment on choosing the right hose. Anyway, we're here. We're here to talk about home improvement. We're going to talk about it when you call us at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Did it hit 70 degrees yesterday?
Well, I don't know if it did here, but I mean, we've had one the other day, and then I think we've got another one coming this week, I believe.
I think I just like to keep track of. I'm sorry.
73 on Wednesday.
Okay. I just like to keep track of my bet with Joe Hardy Sr., who has passed away, by the way. I didn't realize that. He was 100 years old.
Wow.
God rest his soul. Anyway, we'll talk about a lot of good stuff this morning. We've got, let me see, we've got questions about sanding sealer. We've got questions about paint brushes. Got questions about puddles in the yard, patio blocks, treated lumber, chain link fence. There's a lot. That's kind of like, once again, we are bringing to you the proverbial dog's breakfast of home improvement. So there's a lot, but what's always important, what's always most important is your calls to us at 704-570-1110. We had a lot of great calls last week. I mean, everything from squeaky floors to weatherproofing a deck to walk-in tub and shower stuff. So anyway, give us a call. We're at 704-570-1110. You know you can always go to askjohnanddave.com. Check out a lot of the good content, but click on the questions button and send us a note that way, too. And then, David, maybe we'll just, I don't know, are there a lot of emails out there?
Got a few.
If we have some time, maybe toward the end of the one hour or the other, maybe we'll take a dive into those. But
sure.
But there's a lot to cover. We're going to take our first break, give you a chance to get some coffee, give me a chance to get some coffee, and get your questions ready. And give us a call, 704-570-1110. The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave is coming right back. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're taking your calls this morning, as we always do. We're at 704-570-1110. That's 704-570-1110. We'll kick things off. We'll volley first and let you return with a call. But David, question, what is the purpose of sanding sealer?
It's a cheap first coat. It's a filler. It's to fill in the grain. It's to give you, it bonds really well to either raw wood or stained wood. And it gives you a better bond for your for your top coats.
Almost like a primer, right?
It is. It is basically it's a clear primer and it's a filler. It's just not as clear and pretty as like a polyurethane as it would finish. So I mean, truly, it is. It's a filler. It's an inexpensive filler, kind of like primer's an inexpensive paint. You know, it's cheaper to prime than it is to use paint.
But it also gives you a base. You have to stain before you put sanding sealer down, correct?
Correct. Or you could put sanding sealer on raw wood, but you can't stain after afterwards because it's going to block it out. But it fills, especially like oak and grainy woods. It helps fill it.
And if you've got to stain an open end, an end grain, it
keeps it from sucking it in.
Yeah, that's always nasty.
And it's easy. It's in a sanding sealer. You say it's easier to sand. It's lighter. It's easier to sand off because
knock it down.
Right. Yeah. If you leave too much or you get it piled up somewhere, you could sand it down pretty fast. But yeah, that's what it is. Basically a primer.
It's a primer, and so then you would put your polyurethane.
Mm-hmm.
Let it cure. Sand it down.
Yeah. So you sand it, and then you vacuum. And then you damp wipe it. So
tack cloth.
Right. So if you're using, that's when you get to the polyurethanes. But if you're using oil based polyurethanes, then your tack is most of the time we would use paint thinner. If you're using water based between coats, then you're wiping things down with a damp cloth, water.
So. It's actually pretty great and pretty. I'm going to say go ahead and use the E word. It's pretty easy to get a really great finish on with polyurethane if you take a minute to do it right.
It is, and the key is to do multiple even coats. You don't want to get real heavy with it. You want to be in that between, not too light, not too heavy, and then you sand between every coat. And people are like, "Oh, I don't want to do that." Well, you get a much nicer finish when you do that. And it's a light sanding. We're not talking about we're not talking about grinding it with 60 grit or something. We're talking about a 300, a 320 between coats. Steel wool, if you're using.
Yeah, I've always used steel wool, but I use also a
solvent-based. Yes.
Or polyurethane.
Yeah, if you're not using solvent base, if you're using water base, you cannot use steel wool because the fragments from the steel wool will be left behind, and then when the water base hits it, you'll have rust.
It's an interesting way to distress lumber or wood.
Yeah, yeah,
could
yeah.
look interesting. Might be worth
Absolutely.
A try. I don't know.
But yeah, but that's the key is to sand between coats, a light sanding, and then make sure you get all the dust and the anything off of it so that you have a nice smooth clean coat on the final coat.
That leads me to another question, and that would be something that you would know from your days in floor finishing, but an applicator for polyurethane, and then it also leads to the question applicators, because one of the questions we had was, how much money should I really spend on a paintbrush? Before we go there, if you're doing polyurethane on a floor, do they use like a lamb's wool thing?
Yes.
Even for water base?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty. Those are pretty nice.
It's a synthetic for. It's not a real lamb's wool for.
Well, that's because probably illegal or something.
It's
in California.
It's called. You use a T-bar, and it's a it's a synthetic. It's a synthetic, and you're actually puddling. You're pouring the finish on the floor, and then you're pulling it with this T-bar. And when you watch the guys work it,
amazing.
You do your edges. You have to keep a wet edge. It's important because water-based products dry
fast,
very fast.
Yeah.
So you have to keep it even. You want to keep it thick and. You can tell a guy somebody that's really good with a T-bar. I learned how to do it, but those guys put me to shame. They were amazing.
It's an art.
Yeah. Yeah, they could really pull it around and make a nice finish.
So is that really made of lamb's wool?
No. No, it's bad. That's a bad joke.
Bad joke. All right. So let's go for a second to the paintbrush. Because if you go to the Home Depot and stand at the paintbrush aisle or the paintbrush section, I think there's probably like two bays of paintbrushes. And on one side, you've got like a brush that's 4 inches wide or 3 inches wide for like 19 cents. This is all hyperbole. It's very inexpensive, right? I like it when Barb paints, I give those brushes to her because that woman can destroy. I mean, she's good at so many things, but she destroys a paintbrush.
There could be some purpose in that.
Oh. Like me doing the laundry?
Yeah. I didn't know that red would come out in those white towels.
Yeah, why is your sweater like Barbie doll size? anyway, there could be purpose in that. But, I mean, there's a super, super, super inexpensive paintbrushes. And then all the way up to like 20, 30 bucks more for a paintbrush. And I'm like, there's got to be a reason for that. Now, because this is such a riveting topic, and to keep you in suspense about how much you should spend on a paintbrush, we're going to stop right here and talk to John because he has a question. Good morning, John. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Are you there, John? Question for you.
Yes.
We've got a house that's got a concrete pathway that leads to steps to the front door, and there's some cracks in the steps where the horizontal meets the vertical, and then along the sidewalk leading to that. I like using the self-leveling material, but my wife does not like the look of that.
What's the next
best thing that's going to give me a good match and that's going to hold up?
Well, I'm in this dilemma right now because when I poured my driveway, I had them do saw cuts versus shaping it with a tool, you know, where they leave the expansion joints. I didn't want the big wide joints. I wanted skinny joints. Well, when I drive over that with my truck sometimes, or I turn the tire, it's snapping the corner of that concrete off where it's sharp because it's a sharp edge. So I'm trying to find a self-filling or self-leveling filler that matches the concrete better, because the other one's a real light gray. Is that the one you're talking about, John?
Yeah. And that holds up really well. I mean,
it's a great product.
I think they have a color called sandstone, and I'm gonna try to find that and see if that color matches a little bit closer, because that other one's like a dove gray. It's real light.
Yes, exactly.
But I think Sikaflex makes one that's called sandstone, and I think it may be a more of a beigey gray.
I think John, look online or go to the store and look. I don't remember the names as David does, but I do seem to recall that there were a couple different shade options. But I'm not sure still that your wife won't notice it as like, hey, it's obvious that that has been addressed. Then after that, the option would be to go to a masonry solution, and I have had success using two products. An actual anchoring cement, which as it cures expands ever so slightly and tends to hold in that crack longer. And I fortify it with acrylic admix. So I'll brush the acrylic admix into the crack, and I'll use a little bit of it in place of water when I mix it up. And that ultimately that will crack out again, but it has performed much better than just like putting a regular patching cement into it.
And then the other thing, I think, I know we got to get ready to go. The other thing is if you have a piece of concrete or a block, like you could buy a sacrificial block and drill a bunch of holes in it, collect the dust, and sprinkle that dust over top.
As it cures.
While it's still wet. And that may be another way that you can
idea.
Hide it.
Okay.
Hey, John, hang tight a second, because Dave may be able to talk to you a little bit off the air, but we got to slide away here for a break. Folks, it's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're at 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about your home improvement questions when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hey, fam. I'm asking for your support. Help us raise money for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. Families never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, or food, so they can focus on helping their child live. By pledging just $19 a month, you're helping St. Jude give every child with cancer a chance. Help St. Jude save lives. Call 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898 and become a partner in hope today.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're taking calls this morning at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what's important to you. Dave, did you get...
I did. We just talked a little bit more about filling and or sprinkling some dust on top of that.
I forgot about that because we've talked about that and done that for bricks, right?
Where do it with the clear, and then clear, you can put some brick dust if you have a crack in a brick or whatever, and it works. It works, but it's not perfect, but it's better than better than the alternative, right?
Yeah, it is. It'll wear away eventually, but if you take a minute, it'll last long enough to be acceptable.
Yep.
And that might be acceptable. All right. So back to the huge psychodrama about how much money should we spend on a brush? And we were sharing that, like, if you stand at the brush bays at the Home Depot, anywhere, I guess, and you got, you know, brushes from super inexpensive to super expensive. And the question is, how much, you know, should I spend on a brush? If you're doing polyurethane work, you should spend a lot on the brush. That's my opinion. And so then the question, I guess the question would be, well, why is one brush $35 and one brush $3.50? And there's a lot of answers to that question. There's a lot of elements, and we're not going to do like the anatomy. Well, we're not going to do a thorough anatomy of a paintbrush, but there's a couple things that are important. One is just how the bristles are fastened to the handle and what the bristles, what are the bristles made from, or from what are the bristles made? And that makes a difference. You'll have a natural bristle, and then you'll have a synthetic bristle like nylon. It used to be, David, that we would say you really wanted to use a natural bristle. And I remember, like, my dad buying like camel hair paintbrushes and having them last like forever. But he was also, I inherited it, a total whack job when it came to cleaning out a brush. And I am there. But that's another day's story.
Come on, share.
But I don't know. I joke about, you know, is it legal to take hair from a camel anymore? I don't know. I joke about that stuff. Please don't take me.
Yeah, you can only use that for oil-based products.
Right, exactly.
Not water-based, right?
Exactly. So I think there's a couple things to look at when you're buying a paintbrush. Number one is, if you look at the ends of the brush closely, it reminds me of, I don't know, a shampoo commercial from the 70s, like the Frizzy Blues. And it was like for women with long hair or with split ends, right? And it'd be like, this is what it looks like. That's what you want in a paintbrush. And it's called flagging. F-L-A-G-G-I-N-G. I think I spelled that right. And that flagging is intentionally there. The ends are intentionally split because the greater the amount of flagging you have, the more paint the brush will hold. The more paint the brush holds, the easier and neater are your cut-ins, and you paint more efficiently, right? You can get more paint on the surface. You get more paint on the surface. The need to go back over multiple times is reduced, and then the unsightly brush strokes and all that ensues from there is eliminated. So one thing you're looking at is flagging, and you want to see the frizzy blues. You want to see a lot of split ends on that paintbrush. The other thing a painter, and I think it might have been a sales rep for the company, taught me, where he said, grab a paintbrush and kind of squeeze it between your thumb and your forefinger and look at the edge. And look at the edge, you know, looking at it straight on, like the width of it is in front of you, left to right. But then turn it so you're looking at the most narrow edge of the brush, And I wish you could see my hands right now because I'm showing you. But if you look at that narrow a profile of the brush and look at the very, very tip, it should actually form a small arch. So it won't be flat across the top. It'll have a little bit of an arch. And that arch is there because, again, it's there intentionally so that when you put the brush on the surface and you pull, more of the surface touches the paint because of that. You'll have some short ones that are touching and some longer ones that are touching versus pushing it down and only ones closest to the surface are touching the surface, right? So those two factors are important in choosing a paintbrush. Then you want to look at the stamping on the handle that says what products for what products is this particular brush designed? Water-based products, all products, or solvent-based products only. But that's why you would spend more money on a paintbrush. And if you spend money on a paintbrush, you will be you don't have to be a whack job like me, but it helps. You really want to keep the paint out of the heel of the brush, which is why all that flagging and the tapered edge are helpful because you get more paint by just keeping it in the tip of the brush. And clean the darn thing out. Don't let it sit and get dried up in the heel. I've got paintbrushes that are older than my children, and they work just fine. So if you're going to spend $30 on a paintbrush, make it last $30 worth of time. So how much should you spend on a paintbrush? More than $3. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Let's do our Home Depot product of the week. And this week, I'm going to direct you, just go to homedepot.com and go to Garage Wall Organization. You'll see a ton of stuff. I'm talking about this week because there's huge discounts on garage wall organization, actually on a whole bunch of storage stuff. But I'm going to focus on three things. Number one, there's a product from New Age, Slat Wall. It's an organizing wall that you can mount to the wall. $299. It's 34% off what it normally is. Gladiator Gear Wall, same concept, a little different manufacturer. $95. It's 20% off the regular price if you're buying it online. And then Husky Steel Pegboard. Husky, a name you trust. Steel Pegboard, what a great idea. It's a two-pack, $71. It's 20% off the regular price. If you're going to get out in the garage and kind of get life organized to get ready to, you know, do your stuff for the spring and summer, this is the perfect opportunity. So go to Garage Wall Organization, but check out New Age Slat Wall, Gladiator Gear Wall, Husky Steel Pegboard, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Great discounts and special pricing right now this time of year. So check it out. That's our Home Depot product of the week for this week, or products of the week this week.
I like that, the pegboard idea.
Oh. Yeah,
because you know, normally when you have pegboard, it's in the garage or your shed or your shop in this area because basements aren't as prevalent, and eventually that hardboard gets damp.
Yeah,
and then you can no longer get the pegs in or out.
it's just stouter.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, and it's Husky, right? So I should have looked up the warranty. I think it's got like a lifetime warranty. Are certainly a very strengthy one. So yeah, it's a great product.
Pretty cool.
All right. So we were talking about how much money should you spend on a paintbrush, and we said, you know, probably more than you think, right?
Yes.
Don't buy unless you're gonna just like if you're putting glue down or like what I'm doing. I'm trying to think of something I spread. You know, sloppy. We used to have to put. I mean, I'm kind of dating myself now, but we had galvanized gutters growing up, and so. Every other season, you got up there, you cleaned out the gutters, and you put the black asphalt varnish, you know, in the gutters to line them and prevent rust and stuff. And we just use a junker throwaway brush for that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a time and a place for the inexpensive brush, but don't put polyurethane down with a brush, you know, a 3-inch brush that costs you $1.59. No, you're just not going to be happy. Right.
And you know, I think the other thing, too, is if you have a lot of painting to do, you should probably grab a hold of that handle. You want something a little thicker.
Ergonomic, yeah.
Yeah, a little heavier, because your hand tends to get fatigued when it's too small. And of course, if you have small hands, you don't want to get a brush that's too big either. So, but they do make nice brushes, John, with the flagging you're talking about, that do have thinner and thicker handles. Mm-hmm. So
that's a good point.
Yeah, get a feel of that, and you know, because I've been known to have a brush in my hand all day a few times in my life. So
your hand will cramp up.
Yeah, it really will. It's kind of like, you know, when I was younger, when I was a kid, I was painting empty apartments, vacant apartments, and I found that we used to use a push broom handle as the extension handle, and then the first time I ever got a hold of one that was thick, I was like, oh my gosh,
nice, right?
Yeah, because you know you don't get near as much fatigue in your wrist and your forearms, so. Pretty interesting what a difference that makes. So if you have a lot of painting to do, just make sure you feel the brush and make sure it's comfortable in your hand.
Good advice. All right, so we've solved the high drama of how much money should you spend on a paintbrush. Mm-hmm. We just move into a different topic here. The question was, what's a good all-purpose cleaner? And then there's like for concrete, for siding, for brick. There's a couple of things we should talk about with respect to brick, because there could be some things that don't go well there. But if you're not careful or if you're not informed, but as a general rule, do you have a go-to cleaner for like concrete or vinyl siding or stuff like that?
I tell you what I keep around the house, and I have multiple cleaners, but I like the Grease Lightning.
Mm-hmm. Because that's powerful, yeah.
It's powerful. It's inexpensive for a gallon. I buy that stuff by the gallon. I don't buy it by the quart. I buy it by the gallon. I buy my own spray bottles, and I pour it. I mix it when it needs to be diluted, depending on what I'm doing. But and then I also like the Simple Green. That's a pretty good cleaner. So when you need to go mild, and especially if you want to spray it directly on something and get it clean. You have to be a little concerned with the Purple Power and the Grease Lightnings and
it's too strong.
It's
right?
too strong. You paint alkali. That straight on an aluminum painted product like a gutter or a garage door, but get your paint can out and your $30 brush because you're getting ready to paint.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't know how I know that. Uh huh.
Yep.
Yeah. That took the stains off and the paint.
Yeah. Yeah. Yikes.
It's clean to the metal. So there you go.
All right. Well, let's see.
Those are my favorites, though. I like those, and I just think they do a good job. And there's other cleaners out there, but that's the ones that I've purchased and the ones that I use, and those are my reasons.
Perfect. All right. So that's good advice. And I think. What am I trying to say? That's kind of a go-to. What about on that? You would use those products on siding, like a vinyl siding and stuff like that also?
I do. I'll clean with that. If it's something that has a lot of mildew on it, then we're probably going to get something with chlorine in it.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'm going to mix either a little bit of laundry detergent or, like dishwashing detergent. Something in there to give put a surfactant in there so that it'll stick. Just a believer in that. But if you're just using regular chlorine bleach, and I know you've used the is it 30 second or 60?
Yeah, I think it's a 30 second cleaner. Yeah,
that's pretty good. That's pretty potent stuff.
It is very potent stuff. It's a concentrate. You can get a version that is. Like ready mix that's not concentrated,
mm-hmm.
But I always buy the concentrated version, and then mix it up myself, and I'll put that in a pump sprayer. Traditionally, I won't draw it out of the pressure washer.
Mm-hmm. You wear your tie-dyed clothes.
Yeah,
it
starts out normal, but they end up tie-dyed, right? But,
yeah, I've got special clothes that I use just for that.
Yeah, no, you have to. It's it's chlorine bleach,
yeah,
basically.
It'll stripe them up good.
But we have heavily wooded lot. then, of course, you get on the north side of a heavily wooded lot where the sun doesn't get there every day, and you do have to deal with mildew issues. And the sooner you stay ahead of them, the better off you are, right? Just don't let it get to the nasties, and then you're fine. Let's talk for a second about brick, though, because you can, and particularly a cleaner on brick and pressure washing brick. Because if you've got a tumbled brick, you're going to do some ugly, bad damage, right?
Yeah, and you have to be careful, because I washed a little bit of the face of our brick off on the foundation because of the red mud that splashed up on it. And I should have just used a cleaner that was made for it, and I didn't. An acid-free cleaner on the brick. And I'll have to think of it because I can't remember the name. But it's good stuff, and it cleans concrete really well, too. It gets red mud off of the concrete.
There you go.
But yeah, you're right. If you pressure wash a tumbled brick, if it feels sandy or a texture on your brick, you have to be really careful about putting too much pressure on that brick, because you will, when you clean that off, it'll just be a real deep red, that iron color brick.
That's just the base brick, the core, that they tumbled to get the finish on.
Looks like the Carolina red clay.
Wonder why that is. It's
why
returning to its roots.
That's it. It's the brick capital of the South, right?
Yes. All right. So I think that's good advice, and I think that's caution. It's good to stay on top of it, but I think it also takes us back to the question that we frequently address, and that is when you're talking about pressure washing, gallons per minute increases versus pounds per square inch increases are really
more water, less pressure.
A good rule of thumb. I remember our friend Tom Skinner trying to school us on those kinds of things.
He was right. Use the cleaners. And then the other thing is, if you don't want to deal with it in the future of having to use a pressure washer on the brick, seal it. It's you can buy sealers that are penetrating, that don't leave a sheen, but will make it much easier to clean. It helps you get rid of the white spotting, the efflorescence, debris. Other things don't stick as easily, and it just makes it easier. And a lot of times you can just use a hose and just a real mild soap, and voila, you're done. and that sealer lasts for 15 or 20 years on brick.
So. Yeah, but it's got to be clean.
It has to be clean.
To put before you put that on there.
Sure, so you can get a bond.
And you'll get... I want to say it doesn't have the sheen to it, and I want to be cautious about how I say this, but it darkens it up just a touch. It gives it kind of it lets the natural variations in color of the brick kind of come out.
Gives you that new smell look.
All right, on that happy note, let's take a break. Folks, you are listening to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We'll take a little break here, get you a chance to get a cup of coffee, get you a chance to get your questions ready, because we want to hear them at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We'll talk when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
When St. Jude opened in 1962, childhood cancer was considered incurable. Since then, St. Jude has helped push the overall survival rate from 20% to more than 80%. St. Jude won't stop until no child dies from cancer. Join me today in supporting St. Jude by calling 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898 to become a partner in hope. Your gift to St. Jude could last a lifetime.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome to hour number two of the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110 is our number, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what's important to you. Good questions so far. We're all over the board on different topics, cleaners, brushes, sanding, sealer. This next one is, I don't know, we've talked about this a couple different ways, and it's there's It's pretty wide open. But it was a question about, I have water puddling in my backyard. What do I do? And maybe let's just talk about a couple of different scenarios, because it really depends on what's going on with the lot at large, doesn't it? I mean, if you've got a sloping lot, you've got a fighting chance. As long as you're not sloping to your neighbor, you got a fighting chance of maybe making some adjustments to deal with it. And then if not, there's some things you can do to maybe make the ground, is the right term, perk a little better, absorb the water a little better,
yes.
Right? But let's talk for a second, David. Let's just say you're on a sloping lot and you can do something to get the water to move in a direction where it'll, you know, follow surface drainage and do what Mother Nature intends it to do. What are the options there?
Well, I mean, if it's a low spot and you can, if you could just fill the low spot in, I mean, and of course it's easier to say than it is to do, but really with the introduction of all this smaller equipment that they have now, these dingoes and small dump trailers, I mean, you could rent that machine and bring it home in the dump trailer, go get yourself a little bit of dirt, and you could actually fill that place in. Of course, with that same machine, you could put a trencher on it, and you could dig a trench, and you could put gravel, and you could put pipe in there.
Carry it out, right?
And normally that's kind of reserved. If you have a sloping lot, you can usually shape it and get the water off without having to dig into the ground, at least putting pipe. If your lot is not sloping, if you're kind of on a flat lot or it's a very, very mild pitch, then you may end up having to do just that, and that is to put a French drain in, which is nothing more than a perforated pipe surrounded by gravel that goes down into the ground, and that just allows that water to soak through that gravel, get in that pipe, and get it out of there just a little bit faster.
And when you do that, I think we talked about, I mean, we're not going to have time, I guess, to get every little nuance of it. We talked about putting a silt sleeve over the
not a bad idea
over the pipe, right?
Well, or the other thing you can do is you can actually line the ditch with a landscape fabric, a heavy duty landscape fabric. It's perfarated, which will allow and then you fill it with rock, the pipe and the rock, and cover it up, and then that holds the dirt from getting in the rock,
right?
Which eventually that's what happens, and then it'll stop the rock up. So I really kind of like that way better. And if you really want a foolproof system, you put a sleeve over the pipe too.
Right. Now you're in business.
You've made it many, many, many years of proper drainage.
Yeah, I think the challenge is just over a period of time, it just gets clogged up.
Right.
All right, let's talk to Dan. Good morning, Dan. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Pretty good.
How can we help?
My wife saw this commercial on TV, and we've been seeing it. Our roof is 10, 15 years old or so, but it's this, you know, company comes out, and they show them spraying your roof down and anything like that. Is there any validity or any value to that?
I mean, we've heard from a couple of folks that they liked it, that their roof was nice. It's pretty new, so we don't know what the longevity of it is. It's kind of like
that's my thought. Yeah,
yeah. It's kind of like when you go on somewhere and you read reviews and people give it, you know, 5 stars, and they say, "But I haven't used it yet. We just got it, but the shipping was good." I'm like, "Okay, thanks."
The can is beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and we talked to I think they called us, weren't we at the spring show one time?
I think so, yes.
And they called in, I think it's called Roof Max.
Roof Max, yeah.
And they called in the show, and he gave us some ideas. I mean, and what they were saying makes sense. It's kind of like you would rejuvenate vinyl or leather or something. You could put a conditioner on it, and that's almost what they're doing, is they're putting something back on that dry shingle, because that's what happens, is the sun or the heat eventually bakes the petroleum out of it, and that then it becomes brittle, and then it starts to crack and wither, kind of like me. And
yeah. So, all right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Other than that, if you do it, man, we would love it, and I'm sure other callers would too. If you'd let us know how you like it and what you think.
Yeah, if there knows anything about it, give me a call or you know.
And you can use code word guinea pig.
Yeah. Thank you.
No, say R&D.
Thanks,
all right, thanks for the call, Dan. Code word R&D.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, if folks are listening and you've used the product and you love it, I remember when the gentleman, I feel like there were two people involved. And anyway, they were very confident and not, you know, sometimes, I don't know, to use a technical term, they're confident in a sleazy sort of way. These guys did not have that vibe. They were
talking about what they believed in their product.
So
we'll find out over time. I mean, it's just one of those things. It's new. Somebody's got to do it.
The principle makes sense to us, right?
Yeah, so, that's what when he explained it, I thought, oh yeah, this very well could be it. It's just I think it's not a one and done. I think you probably have to go again with it. So
yeah, all right. So that's good. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We were talking about puddles in the yard. You have lakefront property and you're not on a lake issues. Did we cover that adequately? I think so.
I mean, I think it's just the main thing is to just when you're buying something, pay attention to... a lot of times we don't look at that. You're excited, but look at the drainage as best you can. Sometimes when the yard's landscaped with lots of shrubs and trees, it's hard to see and hard to pick it up. But pay attention as you drive down the street to the house from afar, if you can, and look at it that way. And then, of course, always try to ask the neighbors if they're out and about, hey, you ever notice any water standing around here? That's what happened to me, a house we bought in Weddington one time. And I went around before I bought the house and I asked the neighbors because the house looked low to me in the lot. And I asked all the neighbors and everybody said, no, we've never seen it flood. Well, that was when we were in that 5-year drought. As soon as the drought was over, guess what? I was right. It was built in a low spot.
Yeah, so did you, I mean, yeah.
I was able to fix all of it. Just with all the things we just talked about, it was fine.
I think the one of the things I wrote down from what you're saying, and we'll get Kirk, but it's just renting equipment that was not available, 20, 30 years ago.
Sure.
Kirk, good morning. You're welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thank you. Quick
How can
question
we help?
For you guys.
Okay.
Yeah, my wife and I have been noticing in the wintertime that we're getting a slight odor inside our home. It almost smells like fumes from gas. Problem is, we're totally electric, got a heat pump, so no gas. So I'm wondering, is Home Depot, or is there any kind of device that we can use to try to track down where this odor is coming from?
Well, if it's gas, you can get the gas company out and they have a sniffer to tell that, but you don't have that scenario unless there's like gas lines coming in that you're just not using. What about like a powder room or a bathroom that doesn't get used frequently? Do you have one of those?
We do have a powder room, but it can use pretty often.
Okay. Where I was headed. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Trap.
Yeah, that's sometimes you'll get it'll smell a little bit like a natural gas odor or a gas odor just because you're getting some sewer gas back up in. The other thing that could be happening is if it gets used frequently, but you've got a venting issue, so when you flush a toilet, there's not enough venting, and so the movement of the water, the physics of it pulls water out of a trap, so it creates a slight vacuum, and it'll draw just enough water out of a trap to let sewer gas back in. That could be a potential source of that smell, since natural gas is not likely the culprit. Mm-hmm. David, what are you thinking? Or even if there's a Studer vent.
Yes, an air admittance valve, correct.
Right. If there's an air admittance valve on one of the vanities that has failed, it's letting sewer gas back in. And significantly or ever so slightly. When we say air admittance valve, does that make sense to you, Kirk? Do you know what we're talking about?
Is that one of those valves like underneath the sink that,
yes.
that doesn't
yes.
actually go to the roof?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
So if you need to look for one of those and see if you have one underneath a sink, a lot of times you'll see them in a kitchen where the sink is in an island, or if the sink is under a window, they're not allowed to cut through the outside studs anymore in a newer house. So,
I didn't even think about that. We do have one of those situations in the basement. We've got a kitchen sink with no exit valve. I mean, piping going through the roof.
Right. Yep. And so that may be it. The valve in there. It's just rubber, rubber, and it'll dry out. What happens, and then they can hang up in the open position. And cause you to have a little bit of sewer gas come in the house. So,
okay.
And it is a very similar smell.
It does. John, like a kind of a rotten egg smell.
Yeah, it is. It's that musty smell. So, it's one of those. The only other thing you could do, Kirk, is you can go up on the roof to the actual vents, and you can dump some peppermint oil down those vents with a little bit of water. And then you could come in and you could sniff around all the fixtures, and you could see if it's a leak, because sometimes you can actually have a leak. A seal on a toilet will go bad, and it doesn't leak out. Normally you notice, because water will spill out from underneath the bowl itself on the floor. But sometimes they leak, and it'll leak a little sewer gas, and you won't have any water come out. And the gas will just escape. So,
makes sense.
Anyway, here's the trick though with peppermint oil. If you get any on you, or if it splashes on you, you won't be able to tell the difference in the house.
Okay.
So somebody else will have to be the sniffer in the house.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yep.
One other question. We only notice it, and I've noticed it the last two winters. So only during the wintertime do I notice the smell.
Yeah, and that's why John went right to the dry trap, because with the heat on and all that, it dries out. It could dry out so fast. It's amazing how fast. I mean, if you have indoor plants, you know how fast they dry out in the wintertime. So
yeah, exactly.
That's a good chance that's what it is. And you could have a trap that's tilted, and it doesn't take much for the water to come out. So
the other thing on that that could be climate. Sensitive would be, to David's point, if you had a small leak in a floor flange where the floor has contracted a little bit because it's not as humid in the house, and now that break or fault or leak is expanded slightly, and so now you're getting an issue where once everything swells up from humidity.
You're talking about a floor flange for a toilet?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We just replaced the flooring in both the commodes, so
probably not there.
It may not be that. And then here's the worst case scenario, and I've seen this a handful of times, is a screw got run into a vent pipe, and it eventually rusts off, especially if it's a wet vent. And you don't. I mean, the only way that you could find that is either through demo, was usually when I've seen them, or the peppermint oil will actually come out, but you need to put your fan on your furnace in the on position so that you're creating that pressure. That way it's drawing air and pulling it back to that furnace, because that may be why you're smelling. Although it's running in the summer with air conditioning, it's just a combination, but I think maybe it's a dry trap. That's really what I think.
Great.
Winter.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for the call, Kirk.
Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
So Kirk still has some sleuthing to do to figure that out.
Yeah, but you can kind of narrow it down to a point. You hope that those are the things that find it, but just being winter time and all of that makes a difference. And of course, that could be why the Studer vent is
exactly
not as pliable.
Exactly. There's it's just it doesn't take a bunch. It doesn't take a major, you know, opening to emit just enough in there. Otherwise, it would be obnoxious too. Like he notices it. I guess we could have asked. Is it like an overwhelming? It didn't sound like this was this overwhelming thing. They just noticed they're sensitive to it. So
right.
And then the other challenge could be to just the dryness of the air could make that more pronounced. Right. There's any of a number of sensory
exactly.
factors. That could exacerbate that in the drier weather. So, all right, that takes that question or at least down a path to work on. The next thing I had written here, David, was kind of still in the backyard, sort of, I guess. And the question is, I have 12 by 12 patio blocks, pretty, but they're all uneven. What do I do? You got to pick them up and relay the base, the sand base underneath those, right?
You get what you do. And, you know, if the ones along the house are pretty level, then you could start there and leave those and let that be your pattern. But most likely they have to come up. Got the same thing with our travertine around our pool. You know, it's getting to that age that enough sand is washed out from underneath. You could start to see it when the sun's setting, especially. Coming
across
it, you get
the little shadow.
You get the shadows. You can really see it. So
there's a trick that I think we shared probably in a hack somewhere. But when you're putting a base of sand in, the challenge also is getting that base level right, mm-hmm. so that you don't have dips and valleys in that. And I saw a little trick that I thought was pretty cool. And they laid a piece of half inch PVC pipe into the sand bed before or where they're going to put the bed, and then they filled and they ran. They had that in multiple places so that they knew as long as they covered the top of that PVC pipe, they had an even cover.
Yeah,
so
you run a screed across it.
Yeah, and you just pull up the screed board and you're good to go. All right, so speaking of good to go, we got to go for a break here. We're going to take your calls at 704-570-1110 or questions at AskJohnAndDave.com, and we'll talk home improvement when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
St. Jude treats children across the country and around the world, regardless of color, creed, or financial capability, because they're committed to love and care for their neighbors. Join me in helping St. Jude give every child with cancer the chance they deserve to survive. Together, we can save more lives. Call now to become a partner in hope. 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. That's the name of our phone number. Call us. We'll talk about what's important to you. We're going to do our Home Depot product of the week. This week it's products, plural, of the week, because I'm going to ask you to go to homedepot.com and search for garage wall organization. It'll open up a whole bunch of stuff for you. There's three things that I'd love to share with you right now that I think are super great. Number one, manufacturer New Age steel slat wall. A great organizational tool. It's $229, 34% below what it normally would be. Gladiator gear wall. Kind of a tricky name for the same thing. It's another slat wall product. I think that's an awesome way to get things easily accessible and organized in your garage. $95, 20% below what it normally is. And then Husky, pardon me, a name that we all know and love, steel pegboard. What a concept. Two-pack, $71, 20% below what it normally is. Pardon me. So check those things out. Those are awesome products. It's a perfect time to get in the garage, get things organized so you can, you know, do your lawn battles and project battles and just be ready to take on the world this spring. So that's it. That's our Home Depot products of the week for this week.
And, you know, and slat wall, and I think a lot of times we say it, people maybe don't know what it is, but you see it in retail all the time, even at the phone store. They could put those little – these are so many types of shelves and hangers that you could put on slat wall. But that was probably derived from pegboard, wasn't it? Wouldn't you think?
Yeah, exactly. So it's the probably, same principle.
Yeah, it's the same principle. It's more versatile.
It's more actually the original users of it were retailers.
Right.
They developed it because it had a nice clean look. It didn't look like all those dots from pegboard. And then you could the devices just flip, you know, up behind a groove and rest down, and gravity holds it in place. And you can put little shelves on there. You can put hooks on there. There's just a lot that you can do with it. So it really was a consumer adaptation of a concept that retailers have been using forever. Mm-hmm. So anyway, great products, great stuff, and enjoy it. Check it out. All right, we were talking about patio blocks, getting them level, redoing the sand. You've got to get underneath for and reset that sand, and you want to tamp it down. pardon me. You can rent a plate tamper, which is a little bit different than the what I call the jumping jack tamper.
That's what everybody calls it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's the right terminology or not, but I mean that's a great product when you're doing a particular area and you really got to get at it. But it distributes all of that force in a rather limited area, and so the chances of keeping things even become more and more difficult. It's really for a different application. But a plate tamper is just nothing more than a big plate. I think it's probably about 3 foot by 3 foot, maybe a little bit less than that. Mm-hmm. And it vibrates, and you run it over the top of the sand, and it vibrates, and it tightens up all of the spaces between the sand grains. And gives you a nice, solid, stable solution. There really is very little non-solid surface that is as stable as correctly packed sand.
Yes,
that's the reason that it it's the base of choice. Mm-hmm. So
it washes out of it can wash out with heavy rains eventually. Because what it does is it floods, and then the sand will rise up, and then a little bit comes out. That's what we're dealing with our pool deck, is that, you know, even though the drainage is great and we have good pitch, you know, when you get these, you get 4 inches of rain in 4 or 5 hours, it's what it does is it floods the deck enough that it floats the sand up and it washes it out. And then, you know, you get a little settlement here and there. But I'm not doing ours until somebody actually stumps a toe. So it's going to have to be some blood drawn first.
There's going to have to be casualties.
Yeah.
All right.
Probably be me.
Yeah. That'll change your story.
It'll
very
get
quickly.
Done a lot quicker.
Yeah, that'll change your tune. All right. So there's a couple questions on that. Number one, the next question that I have related to that was just, hey, there's moss in the sand joints between my pavers. So the answer to that is, let's deal with that. And then I have a question for the foundation or the sand underneath your pavers. So there's no way to get the moss out of there. I think you got to just get a pressure washer after that. I mean, I suppose you could get like a mortar, like a joint tool from masonry and scrape the stuff out and I don't know. And
yeah.
You could take the space out between individual grains of sand manually.
It's hard. And we have a little bit of stuff growing in between ours now. And that's the pressure washer's exactly.
It's what you got to do. Now, the challenge will be the pressure washer knocks the sand out of the joint. What do you put back in place?
Well, we're not using anything between. They originally put polymeric sand. Most of that has gone mm-hmm. away. But I didn't want it in there, and I don't really like it because it holds. I challenge you to pull one of those blocks out of there. It's pretty hard. You almost have to break one and snap it and get it out in pieces, and then you can start removing the ones around it. So that's how tight it is without sand, because the sand is pretty much gone. So ours is just because of the dirt and debris that probably lands on the deck, and then it washes and it rinses it into the cracks, and then it creates a bed. It's no different than the cracks in the driveway, right? The expansion joints. So you get enough dirt and debris in there, and, you know, I mean, I've seen people that have had better grass in the cracks of their driveway than in their yard.
Yeah.
Well, it's so fertile, you know.
There is something to be said for that. I've seen people just let the moss grow, and that's their look. And they're totally cool with
it. Right. And we don't want to do that on our pool deck.
Not in the back. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
But
we're going to be right up against the break. I got a question about the polymeric sand, though. We won't tackle it until we get back. Folks, it's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Sliding away for a little break, 704-570-1110. We'll be back after these messages.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Did you know St. Jude has one of the largest pediatric sickle cell programs in the country? St. Jude freely shares the discoveries they make, and every child saved at St. Jude means doctors and scientists worldwide can use this knowledge to save thousands more children everywhere. Join me today in helping to fight sickle cell disease by becoming a partner in hope. Call now 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We are at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what's important to you. David, I had a question. We were talking about, you know, the pavers, the deck blocks, not deck blocks, but patio blocks. And you talked about the polymeric sand. That's a sand that just has a polymer mixed into it, and it's activated by water. You just work it in, you tamp it in using that same plate tamper we talked about, just mist water over it, and the water activates the polymer, and it sets hard, rigid.
Right, and it adheres to the sides of the stone.
Right.
And or whatever you're using, and it holds it in place pretty well.
Now, here's the question. Would you use that under the stone? In other words, you get it all level and then mist it and then layer on top of it, or does that defeat the purpose of the sand?
Letting the water through it.
It's gonna
For drainage.
It'll bubble.
Yeah,
it could heave.
I could see where you may want to use it in some places, but yeah, I think there could be some issues with that. I used a little bit of Portland cement mixed in with the fines, you know, the real fine gravel. When I put a 4-inch trench drain in part of our pool deck, the length of it, just because I wanted to. I was told I didn't need it, but I put it in anyway, and I'm glad I did.
After
I see some of the rains that we've had, and I like it better than those little 1-inch or inch and a half, 2-inch pool trench drains. Those look nicer, but
they clog so
easy. What a pain in the butt. Yes. So I put in a wider drain. I don't have that problem. It's easy to pop the screws out if I need to get in there, which I haven't yet, believe it or not. But I've got some settlement. But when I was installing that, you know, I shot that grade, and of course I'm using strings and I'm making sure I have the pitch right. But underneath that, I got the great idea to mix Portland cement with that. With the fines, when I got to my final grade, and I compacted that down, and I think that's helped keep that drain flat and pitch. So I'm not holding water anywhere in that at this point. Even though I'm starting to see some settlement of the travertine, not right next to it, but in other areas around it. So, but eventually it's probably going to have a problem. So. You know, water's getting underneath it somewhere.
Yeah, there's no such thing as like perfectly.
Mm-mm.
I mean, I guess you could do a cast steel or a pour. You know.
Well, you could pour concrete and then put your pavers over it, and you know, if you want to have a permanent base.
That's true.
You know, and you could do that, and then you'd put a block or a guard on the outside so that the stone won't move, or in our case, travertine. Which is what we did. We just put a piece of angle bracket, but they also will pile concrete up. They'll dig a little trench, and they'll after the pavers or your travertine are finished, and they'll mortar put concrete in there, and that'll be the dam that holds the stone and keeps it in place. It's your picture frame, essentially.
Got it. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah, but I think if you do something like that outside, if you don't pour concrete, eventually you're going to have problems, especially if you don't have much pitch. If water's getting through it and it's able to float up the stone or the sand or the fines underneath it, it's going to come up. And, you know, if that comes out, the stone's going to settle.
Yeah.
It's just what you're dealing with. And that's what I'm dealing with.
And it just becomes it just lends to further and further deterioration, because now the water sits longer, more moves.
Correct. It gets quicker. Yeah. You're settling faster.
So you can be uneven on any of a number of.
So on that note, I want to tell everyone we're going to have a little party at my house. It's going to be a sand filling party.
Bring your own sand.
I'll supply the sand. You just bring a good back. That's the problem. It's all that bending over.
Yeah, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, that's good advice. Here's a question, and I don't know how much time. Well, we have plenty of time, I guess. Question is, can you paint treated lumber? Can you paint treated lumber?
You can. I would say that you would want to treat it with something like Cedar Shield.
That's where I'm okay.
Yeah, we'll give it 72 hours or more to dry, and then paint. The problem with lumber outside that's exposed to the elements, treated or otherwise,
yes,
is it's going to take moisture on. Remember, it used to be a tree. People think I'm being a smart aleck when I say that, but it used to be a tree. It wants water. It's wet goes to dry, and that's what it's going to do. So if you paint something that cannot reject the water, it's going to absorb it, and it's going to swell, and it's going to push the paint off of. It's what it does.
Right.
So that's how you always know, like old siding. It's a telltale sign. It just tells you that there's water behind it.
So you're right. It was a tree, and God's design was such that he had this product so that water could go from the ground 50, 100, 250 feet into the air. So it's a really good conductor of moisture, as you point out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that when I say treated lumber specifically, treated lumber or lumber that's treated is usually some version of pine, most frequently a southern yellow pine, mm-hmm. because it accepts the treatment best. The reason it accepts the treatment best is it is porous, and it draws the chemical carrying the treatment, or the water carrying the treatment in, best. So, so there's that. But you can paint treated lumber, and there's reasons. I guess let's talk about for a second the different species of wood, right? So I think it was just a couple weeks ago somebody asked the question: Is there a wood that I can put outside that's going to hold up a little bit better that I can paint and so on? And we said, well, you could probably use like a hem fir product, which is a much slower growing product,
mm-hmm.
Has a much tighter grain, almost no grain. When you look at the typical hem fir board, and it's the grain that that allows the water to move. Remember, that's the annular rings, so that's where everything's moving up and down in the tree, and it's also what it expands and contracts the most, right? So the heavier the grain, the more water it's going to, or the more quickly it's going to draw the water in, and the more likely it is to warp, because it's going to warp along those grain lines, right?
Right.
So if you're going to paint something outside, you might even consider not going with treated, painting it really well, or as you say, treating it with like a cedar side product, and then painting it, because now you're stabilizing that wood from picking up the moisture and giving up the moisture, because ultimately the paint will fail just because it cracks, right?
Right, absolutely. And that's because of the movement.
Right.
Yes, and expansion contraction is the main reason, really, for all coatings when you think about it.
Ultimately. And the reason that there's been you know, much more success, or the durability or the longevity of paint on exterior surfaces is so much better currently than maybe 30, 40 years ago, is all of the R&D that went into water-based products that created a surface that actually that paint actually will stretch a little bit.
Sure.
Right? It'll expand and contract ever so slightly. So rather than create a fissure or crack in the surface, it expands and yields a little bit. Kind of an interesting comment on life. If you flex a little bit, you're less likely to crack.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
Well, and you know, the other thing we talk about with painting outside is Sani Tread. Another product, if you paint all six sides of a board with that product and you don't allow any opportunity for moisture to get in, it will last forever. And I think you could put paint over top of that too. So if you wanted to change colors, so it's kind of back to what we were talking about with the sanding sealer when we started the show. As a primer, you could almost use that Sani Tread as a primer, but it's kind of an expensive and it's a tough project because it's a little tough to work with. But if you put it on there, you won't ever have to worry about it again, which is kind of cool. You know?
No, that is cool.
I mean, it may change colors. It may look ugly. It may get dirty, and you'll have to wash it.
You're going to have to wash. You are going to have to wash. It's going to hold dirt a little bit more because of what it is. But that's all right. You can clean the dirt off.
Right. And it's
that's
easier
how we
to clean.
The show.
Right. So easier to clean than to paint. So.
All right, so there's several topics here. I don't think we have enough time to get into them, and so I'm not going to start down that path. But I made one note, and I don't want this to sound like a shameless plug, but I think it's sharing important information. We talked about it like three or four times in the course of our show today, and that is renting the right equipment to do jobs. You don't want to necessarily buy a plate tamper or buy a dingo.
Well,
yeah, different world, David. Different
I know,
world.
But I don't even need it anymore, but I still want to buy it.
All right. So call David. Go to his party, put some sand in. Maybe he'll buy you a tool. I don't know.
or let you borrow one of mine.
Yeah, use his. But I do want to talk about the Home Depot does have an awesome tool rental solution in so many of their stores for consumer and serious professional rentals. But then there's an entire like large equipment version, right? And you can visit all that stuff on the website. But I think it makes sense to get educated on that a little bit because you're going to discover you can do more jobs than you thought possible and you don't have to invest in the full cost of the tool. Then the rental rates are pretty reasonable. So even if it's not the Home Depot, consider renting a tool versus buying it and make the job easier. All right, we are out of time. We got to skedaddle. Folks, thanks for being with us this week. We love it. You know that every week we like to close our show with a reminder that we think the most important kind of home improvement that you can make is the one that makes your home a happier place to live in. Don't forget to work on that project this week, and we'll see you next week when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.